I simply cannot think of the Balm of Gilead without thinking about my good friend, Harold Bowen, which is why this sermon is dedicated to his memory, and this is why Betty and Freddie McMahon have provided these beautiful flowers in memory of Harold. There is a balm in Gilead became Harold's favorite spiritual song. In an article I wrote on Harold, I said that we were an unlikely pair. Here he was, the great athlete, the Hall of Fame football player, the seasoned coach, the legendary broadcaster, the popular mayor, the local celebrity, and here I was, just a Baptist preacher. But we formed this unlikely friendship. In fact, Harold became one of my closest friends. He was my mentor. He was my confidant. He was my encourager, my colleague, my sometimes partner in crime. But most of all, he was my dear friend. And I have a couple of pictures that I'd like to show you that are very special. This is a picture, probably in the mid-90s. Harold and I are getting ready for the football season. And Chad, I bet that Donnie Roberts took that picture, and it was used in the Dispatch's football preview edition. We're standing in front of the press box at Philpott Stadium, the press box that now bears his name. I look at that picture and I say, who is that young guy? Joyce looks at this picture and says, who is that skinny guy? But I want you to look at Harold's face. He's smiling, he's happy. It's evident that this is absolutely what he enjoys doing. And thank you to Betty and Freddie for providing that for me. And then we found another picture. This is an action shot. Harold and I are in the press box at Holt Moffitt Field calling a baseball game, an American Legion game. Now, here I am. I'm pretty intense. You know, I'm focused on what's going on the field. Harold has this strange look on his face, like, what in the world is that guy saying now? Or he maybe was thinking, it's about time for my Snicker bar, and I haven't gotten it yet. That was a tradition. Every night at Holt Moffitt Field, he would get a Snicker bar, and he absolutely loved it. But the other reason I always think of Harold when I think of the Balm in Gilead, it was the night that Lexington Davidson, well, I thought we were playing Mount Gilead. For some reason, Harold was not at the game, but he was listening. And I went through the whole broadcast talking about Mount Gilead. The visitors were Mount Gilead. Harold never told me before that we were not playing Mount Gilead, we were playing Mount Gilead. I wasn't pronouncing it correctly. But do you think he picked up the phone and called the radio station and had Hal to call me and say, Ray, you're mispronouncing the name? People did that frequently. No, he left me hanging in the wind. And the whole game we were playing Mount Gilead, which is the way it's pronounced in the Bible. And speaking of the Bible, if you go back to the book of Genesis, remember the story of Joseph in the coat of many colors? And his brothers became jealous, and they kidnapped him, and they threw him in that pit. Well, when they were trying to decide what to do with him, they looked up, and there was a caravan of camels. They were Ishmaelites. They were traders on their way to Egypt with precious cargo. They were bringing the balm of Gilead. And that's how Joseph ended up in Egypt. There's another passage in 1 Kings that's in the 10th chapter. In fact, it's one of the most exotic stories in all Scripture. when the elegant Queen of Sheba made a visit to Jerusalem, to King Solomon, who was known for his great wisdom. She also came with a caravan of camels, and she brought precious gifts. She brought gold and silver and precious stones and the balm of Gilead. One of my favorite stories is at the end of 1 Samuel. It's the story about the inglorious end of King Saul and his sons. We all know how King Saul had fallen from grace, how he had strayed away from God, and God had removed his blessing from him. But in one final battle, they were battling the Philistines on Mount Gilboa. And King Saul and his sons were all killed in the battle. And in one final act of disgrace and humiliation, the Philistines stripped the once mighty king of his armor. They severed his head and they hung his body on the walls of Bethshan. We'll visit Bethshan when we go to Israel. And you can stand at Bethshan and you can look over the Jordan River and you see hills in the distance, and those hills are in the land of Gilead. And there's a little village. There was a little village in Gilead called Jabesh Gilead. And when King Saul first came to power, he heard that Jabesh Gilead was under attack. And he went with some of his men. He defended the city. He rescued the city. And they never forgot it. They were eternally grateful. And when the valiant men of Jabesh Gilead, and that's how they're described in Scripture, when they heard about the disgrace and humiliation of their king, they sent a rescue mission. It was a stealth mission. By cover of night, they crossed the Jordan River. And they rescued the bodies of King Saul and his sons and brought them back to Jabesh Gilead and gave them a proper burial. But by far, the reference that we know the best is the one that Burl shared with us from the 8th chapter of Jeremiah. When the prophet asked the question, "Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there?" Well, what's going on here? Jeremiah is often called the weeping prophet, and with good reason. This is just one example. This passage is a painful lament. This is a tortured scream, a mournful cry, an anguished exclamation of grief. The prophet cries out, "I drown in my grief. I'm heart sick. The harvest is past. The summer has ended, and we are not yet saved. Is there no balm in Gilead? Is there no physician there?" We've all been there. We've been there in moments of darkness and moments of despair when we have cried out in anguish, when we have wondered, "Where is God? How could God allow this to happen to me? My life is a total wreck. Everything has fallen apart. Everyone has turned against me. There's no one who is there to help me. God is silent. God is absent." And we cry out in lament, in lamentation. We cry out this tortured cry of grief. And that's what Jeremiah is doing. The reason? What's going on here? Well, the little nation of Judah is about to be captured and destroyed and annihilated by Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians. And the reason is because they have turned away from God. There is a difference in Scripture in suffering because and suffering with. They are about to suffer because they have turned away from God, because of their sin. And do you know, if there was anyone who knew better, it should have been the people of Judah? Because this was about 586 BC. Now, if you go back about 125 years, if you go back to another mighty kingdom, the Assyrians, one of the most miraculous stories of deliverance in the Bible is found in the book of 1 Kings in the 19th chapter. Or actually, it's 2 Kings in the 19th chapter. You see, the Assyrians were the world power before the Babylonians. Those of you that come to my Bible studies know that I love maps. I love to put maps up and show you Galilee and show you Palestine and show you the ancient kingdoms. Well, one of my favorite maps is a map of the Assyrian Empire at the height of its power in 671 BC. Now, just imagine a map of the Middle East. Go all the way up to Turkey. It starts in Turkey. It comes down to Syria and Lebanon and Jordan. It goes down to the Sinai into Egypt. And then if you go to the east, it includes Saudi Arabia. It includes Iraq. It includes Iran. It goes all the way to present-day India. This was a massive empire. But there is, if you look at that map really close, there's one little speck. The map I have, everything in Assyria is green, and there's one little speck that is yellow that doesn't belong to the Assyrians. It never belonged to the Assyrians. As mighty, as powerful, as dominating as Sennacherib and his armies were, they were never able to capture Jerusalem and the people of Judah. You know why? Read 2 Kings 19. It's a miracle. It was divine intervention. Sennacherib had surrounded the city of Jerusalem. The only reason people were able to withstand the fact that they were surrounded, the siege, was because the king Hezekiah had dug a water tunnel. It's considered one of the archaeological marvels of the ancient world. In fact, that water tunnel was done so well that to this day, water is running through that tunnel to the city of Jerusalem. And when we go to Israel, if you take your bathing suit, you can walk through that tunnel with water up to here. Because they had water, they were able to withstand the siege, but only for so long. They knew it was just a matter of time. The Assyrians had already captured Israel. They had already captured all these other nations. But one night, an angel of the Lord intervened. And literally, and I'm going to tell you exactly what it says in Scripture, the Assyrian army woke up dead. Not a good thing. When you wake up dead, that's not good for anybody but Jack Briggs, let me tell you. We don't know what happened, but the ones that were left retreated. And the little nation of Judah was spared. And it was because of the providence of God. Now, you would think that they would remember that. I mean, you would think the children of Israel who were going across the Red Sea would remember that miracle. But if you read in the book of Exodus, they hadn't even started wandering in the wilderness, and they started complaining about the food, the accommodations, the Wednesday night suppers. They just weren't happy about this and that. They were complaining about everything. Well, these people had gotten beyond complaints. They had deserted God. And now the Babylonians were about to come, and we know what happened in 586 BC. You can see to this day the ruins of the old city where they were destroyed by the Babylonians. But the prophet is not one who delights in this suffering. God is never one who delights in our suffering. God is not the one who causes us to suffer. God is the one who suffers with us. And we see the anguished cry of the prophet because his people were about to suffer. If anyone suffered in this world, it was the African slave. The African slave taken from their homeland, families torn apart, beaten with whips by their owners. But yet, it was through slavery that a unique type of faith was born and unique music called the spirituals. In his classic work, The Negro Spiritual speaks of life and death. Howard Thurman makes this profound observation. He said, if you read the book of Jeremiah, you see in the 8th chapter that he asked a question, is there no balm in Gilead? But if you listen to the spiritual, the question mark has been replaced with an exclamation mark. There is a balm in Gilead. There is a physician there. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. About 2/3 of the way down the Mount of Olives, looking over the city of Jerusalem, there is a chapel. It's called the Dominus Felit, which is Latin for the Lord wept. And the chapel is about the place where this scripture from Luke that Burl read took place. When Jesus looks over the city of Jerusalem and he weeps for the city, he weeps for his people, he weeps for us. We have a God who suffers with us. We have a God who weeps for us. I marveled at my friend Harold because later in his life, he became more and more limited because of his physical condition. He started having to take dialysis. He was confined to a wheelchair. But as he approached what we thought was the end, his faith became stronger and stronger, and the light became brighter, and he talked more about the balm of Gilead. And Harold became quite the evangelist. Just ask Dave Colescott. Because it was Harold, Dave, that said to you, brother, I know you've been baptized once, but you need to be baptized the Baptist way. And for those of you who were not here, when I look back over all of my years of ministry, and this year marks the 40th anniversary of me becoming pastor of my first church. 40 years, almost every Sunday. I've been preaching, I've been leading worship, but there's one Sunday that I will never forget that will always stand out. And thanks to Freddie and Betty working so hard with Austin Brook, we had Harold Bowen right here in his wheelchair. And we baptized Dave Colescott. Two things I'll never forget about that service. Number one was the look of joy on Harold's face when he saw I had a Carolina t-shirt on. That was a miracle never to be repeated. But I did it for him, and it was worth it all when I saw his face. But the other, we sang that hymn, there's a balm in Gilead. And I remember Harold sitting right over here, and he had his hands like this. Those of you who are here know that 2 days later, he crossed over the Jordan River into the Promised Land. There is a balm of Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. There is a balm of Gilead to make the wounded whole.
time.